across the galaxy. This is where conspiracy on the wild side meets the perspective of a lifetime. This is the Free Zone with your host, Freeman.
Hello and welcome to the Free Zone. Well, how many of you have tape over your camera on your computer right now? You know I do. I don't like to be monitored. I don't want to have that thing staring me down. And, you know, they're now making camera kill switches for your computer. The FBI on Cyber Monday and Black Friday put out a warning, an FBI warning, that your television could easily be hacked and be watching you in your living room or, God forbid, in your bedroom. That's right. We are being monitored all the time. Welcome to 1984. You know, I remember 20 plus years ago when Echelon was instituted. I don't know if you know about that listening system that was placed in there, but my friends used to call me and go, bomb, 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 terrorist, 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 just to activate the Echelon system's trigger words so that we would be recorded by whoever was listening. It always reminds me of 1984, and I'll tell you, for over the last 20 years, I have been controlling my thoughts, my secrets. I mean, when we go back to 1984, the book, right? And it states, for the first time, he perceived that if you want to keep a secret, you must also hide it from yourself. And I feel that. I feel that. It goes on to say, you must know all the while that the secret is there. But until it is needed, you must never let it emerge into your consciousness in any shape that could be given a name. From now onwards, he must not only think right, he must feel right, dream right. And all the while, he must keep his hatred locked up inside him like a ball of matter, which is a part of himself and yet unconnected with the rest of him, like a cyst. Do you feel that way? Well, if you're not, you're not paying attention. I mean, when we signed on to Skype, the very first message you got, now this has been scrubbed from the World Wide Web. I have looked for a quote on this. I've looked for anyone talking about it, but I remember, that's the thing. I remember, I was there. First message on Skype was, does Big Brother exist? Of course he exists. The party exists. Big Brother is the embodiment of the party. Does he exist in the same way as I exist? You do not exist. If you want a picture of the future, imagine a boot stamping on a human face forever. Welcome to 2020, folks. And I know that my guest tonight knows all about this because he's been doing this as long as I have. He runs the wonderful program Off Planet Radio. Please welcome back to the Free Zone, the amazing Randy Moggins. Hey, Randy.
What do you even say about an intro like that? I mean, I was told in 1998 that TVs then had the ability to basically record video and conversations. That was in 1998. That was before digital televisions and smart TVs and plasma screens and all that we have now.
They were forcing the V chip on everyone.
Of course, the V chip. That was the Clinton era where they basically put that V chip in. That was the beginning of all this, your digitization.
They were giving them away to homeless people. Do you remember? Like, you could go down and get a special coupon to get your V chip television. Everybody had to get the upgrade. And then that HD upgrade came along.
Yeah. I mean, this was all part of their installation of the surveillance society. I mean, it looks like they were a little late, 1998 versus 1984, or were they? My research says we've been deep in this for a real long time.
Well, do you feel yourself censoring yourself, like on the phone? Do you feel that constant surveillance?
It's interesting what you brought up there, because there's actually a whole technique that goes into defense against synthetic telepathy. And I've had this conversation with a number of people that come out of projects. And one of the techniques is literally to take your information, which is normally processed verbally through your prefrontal cortex, but to take that same thought and run it to the back of your mind, which is your visual cortex, so that the information basically processes visually but never pre-verbally. Somehow or another, the formation of verbal articulation of thought, in other words, at the point where you hear the thought in your head, is the point where it literally articulates out into the system and begins to propagate as a telepathic wave. And as freaked out as that sounds, if you play with the concept a little bit, you'll know I'm right. We are censoring ourselves, or maybe we should be censoring ourselves, or maybe we shouldn't. Or maybe, you know, as we roll into this 2020 era, which is, you know, really full bore going to open a lot of things up, we're going to have to deal with the fact that there is no privacy.
Yeah, yeah. There's a ring on everybody's doorbell. There's a camera on everybody's door. There's cameras on every, and the AI is collecting all of this data, right? You can't go to anyone's door, or the real ID that you're going to have to get in October.
Yeah.
To be able to fly anywhere, even inside of the United States, you know, do you have the star on your identification? You know, all the facial recognition that's going to go into that.
In spite of the fact that we were told that we would never have that system because it was our right as American citizens to be able to freely travel state to state, intracontinental, at least. And here we are. I mean, I don't have a current driver's license because of this. It's a quandary. I can't fly right now.
Right.
And I pretty much made the decision that I will not fly. My travel will be by ground.
Yeah.
But they'll lock that down too. I mean, I've heard that eventually, in order to be able to board an Amtrak train, you'll need the same ID as you need to get on an airline. And you'll go through the same security precautions. And they'll probably have some false flag event to make sure that they can enforce that. So,
With all this surveillance, right? We still don't know what hit the Pentagon. We still don't know who killed Epstein. Right, we can go on and on of the list of things that the shootings, all of the cameras everywhere, but yet we have no surveillance of
any of these. They claim with Five Eyes system that they could literally see a dime in the driveway of your house, but yet all these mysteries that they can't solve.
Yeah,
the cameras that go down mysteriously that suddenly nobody knows what happened at these shooter events in schools, public shootings. I mean, we're now in another shooting zone. How many shootings we had this week? We had one in Jersey City, New Jersey yesterday. We've had a proliferation of them. Why? Because this is what I call shooting season. It's when they stage these events to up the terror level so that you're more compliant.
Oh, 2020. What a year it's going to be.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, it's a two-edged sword. From my standpoint, I view 2020 as a portal, quite literally. Not that the numbers themselves mean anything, but because we, as humans, are meaning-seeking, creating creatures, and we give meaning to things. And so there's kind of this whole visual that plays out, the idea of 2020 vision, and the opening of the eye, the third eye, the single eye, of vision. And yet at the same time, there's this kind of panopticon kind of sinister shading to it, because we're also heading into this surveillance society. And so it's like everything else, it's a two-edged sword. What do you do with it? How do you deal with this? And when I started to do this current series, it was I had not done anything like this in quite a number of years. I've mostly done interview type shows for the last 9 years, and the thought of sitting down and actually doing a structured podcast with a theme to it was kind of intriguing to me again, because quite honestly, as much as I love the people that I've interviewed over the years, it's gotten harder and harder for me to feel engagement with, you know, some of the people that I've had to interview to maintain a broadcast schedule, a podcast schedule. But what I was really looking at and what I got the nudge from was kind of intuitive, was that there was this intriguing symbol behind the 2020 thing in the eye of the needle. It just was kind of like a full-blown vision that I got, that we were entering a time where we finally were going to maybe be able to decide our fate individually and potentially collectively as a group of conscious people, which is not necessarily all the people that you view as occupying the construct, but more the conscious group of people. Kind of follow that. And so, you know, I sensed for a long time, being in this media heartbeat, that people, I see the desperation. I mean, what people really want to know is anything going to be all right? I mean, we have all this information. We've gone through this whole awakening experience. And I'm talking to people that, you know, have maybe been doing this for 10 years or longer. There's a sense of desperation. It's like, the more I see, the worse it gets. Does it ever get any better? What's the point of this? Was I not better off asleep?
Right. No,
there's a certain complacency that, you know, you get, I guess, the old Pink Floyd thing, comfortably numb. It's like, is that acceptable? Or do you have to live on the razor's edge and constantly be confronting all of this information that we're buffered with, and the horrible realization that, shit, it's worse, it's far worse than I thought it was, and it keeps getting worse by the second. The more awake I get, the darker it gets. And so it's kind of like, what do we do with all this? What is the real nature of the reality that we live in? And is there an end game to it? What's the point of all this? You know, those are like huge existential questions.
Yeah.
So I sort of tasked myself to take this apart. And what I began to parse out was a result of going back and looking at some of the shows I was doing in 2012. Oddly enough, where we are now feels like, I think, maybe a harmonic of 2012, an echo of 2012. We've been through, in December 21st, 7 years. And it occurred to me, because of my training and background in prophecy, that 7 years is a period of tribulation. And so I started looking at going back through 2012, and I went, you know, it's a pretty interesting period. It was pretty high energy. What have we passed through in the last 7 years? And it really does kind of feel like a tribulation when you start to look at it, because, I mean, if you go back 7 years ago and look at where we were then and where we are now, it's a profoundly different landscape. And yet there is like all this collateral damage on the ground as a result of really this awakened experience that a lot of people have had. I mean, there's a lot of walking wounded within our communities now. So that's kind of the genesis for what I decided to do with this series, was to kind of take apart the time space that we were occupying, and also, where's all this going? What's the point of this? I mean, are we just performing acts of self-sacrifice and continuing to tear off the scabs of this culture and this reality that we occupy? I mean, is there some point to it? Is there an end game? Was there ever a purpose? And that's kind of where my head's at.
Right. If we were to anchor 2012, if the folks want to get to that moment, that was Occupy. Occupy Wall Street, Occupy yep. everywhere.
Yeah.
And it was this conglomeration of just a cluster. No one knew why they were there. They were looking like a bunch of hobos on the side of the corner with their tents and stuff without a solid message to share. Now it seems woke is weaponized. And let's go real quick to the Epstein didn't kill himself meme. Okay, let me jump back to 1984 real quick, all right? The book, all right?
Yeah.
So it goes into, we shall abolish the orgasm, right? And we're going to do away with that. There'll be no laughter except for the laugh of triumph over defeated enemies, right? We feel that. Everybody wants to defeat the enemy. Everybody's out to get them. There will be no art, no literature, no science. And when we are omnipotent, we will have no more need of science. There will be no distinction between beauty and ugliness. And so that takes me to the current modern art. I'm just going to throw this one in there. I know you didn't see this, but there was an art show. Art Bussell, I believe, was the name. And there was a banana, a partially eaten banana, I believe, duct taped to a wall. And that was art. Now, a man came along and he grabbed the banana off of the wall and he ate it. And he said, "What? That's art." You know, this is art right now. And once the banana was removed from the wall, somebody came by with a lipstick and wrote, "Epstein didn't kill himself," in lipstick on the wall. They quickly covered that up. He misspelled Epstein, but that doesn't matter. But this meme of is weaponized. This meme, I mean, Hillary Clinton went on the news and they asked her, "So how did you kill Jeffrey Epstein?" Did you see that clip?
I did not.
Oh my God, you got to see that too. So this is where we're at now. A banana duct taped to the wall is art. Epstein didn't kill himself is the weaponized meme that everybody's associating with. And all of it is to vilify our government, our way of being. And everybody's okay with the idea that all the leaders are rapist pedophiles that eat babies, have snuff films, and all they want to do is get to the heart of that matter and find out and get the villain. And it's the end of laughter. It's the end of everything. It's the rise of ugliness.
It's the ultimate form of nihilism. And you say the end of laughter, that means the end of the most authentic human response. I mean, on the spectrum, we have two responses that are sort of our authenticity. One is sorrow and one is laughter. And everything in between that spectrum is the range of human emotions. And the saving grace of us is that we have the sense of humor. It's a mark of intelligence. So when you no longer can laugh, when you just simply look at the absurd and the absurd mocks you, that's a sign of a deranged society.
Absolutely. We are
sort of the realization of the whole Joker meme, really. You know, this whole thing that's played out with the Joker film and the concept that the incel male is going to go completely ballistic and just start blowing people away was, you know, a way to kind of, I think, jack our consciousness and desensitize us to some very real things that exist in our culture.
A lack of nurture, for one.
Yeah, yeah.
They can't find anyone to care for them. Who can? It's very difficult to get out there in the world and find someone that cares.
Because of the fact that we've been what I refer to as flat screened. I mean, we've become creatures of a world that exists mediated by devices. And yes, in a lot of ways that has dehumanized us to a degree that I don't think most people realize. What goes on the internet? And I've had conversations with people, because I have people who do stalk me and people who have harassed me and threatened me. And I've told at least one of these actors, "Look, if you and I were sitting in a room together right now, you would never talk to me like that. I would never accept that. This would be unacceptable. This was unacceptable social behavior, except for the fact that you're sitting on the other side of a piece of glass."
Right.
And it goes through the whole range of things. You know, this is why we have out of control pornography, for instance, is because all of those barriers have been removed. And I'm not engaging in a campaign against pornography. I'm simply saying it's a marker of a society that's unhinged itself from its most authentic human responses.
It is the age of ridicule. I have one video on YouTube that has 1 million views. It's my most popular video out there. It's not me. It's Stuart Swerdlow. It's one I put up from the Free Your Mind conference. And you know why it has 1 million views? Because everybody hates it. So it's being shared like mad.
Yeah.
And it was as soon as that video hit 1 million views that YouTube decided to demonetize me. They're like, oh, no, we can't allow that. You're making money. And set me adrift. Mm-hmm. Thank God for my members. You know, the show wouldn't carry on without them. Yeah, it's the age of ridicule. And it really goes right back to that 1984 quote, there will be no laughter except for the laugh of triumph over a defeated enemy. And it's sad.
And even in the context of like 1984, who was the perceptual enemy? I mean, who is our enemy now?
Who knows? Does the Brotherhood exist?
And this comes back to this whole, you know, funhouse mirror kind of existence is, what is the end game of evil? What is this structure in our society that's so based on deplatforming the human as what they actually were, a soul-infused, emotional, caring, loving, invested with a spirit of a divine creator? Is it to deplatform that divinity from us? Is it to unseat us from the divine aspect of ourselves to the point where we simply become automatons? You know, and to that end, again, is it slavery, or are we doing this to ourselves? Are we in some sense kind of co-agency with the dark forces that we think we're opposing?
Yeah, goodness is rarely shared. It's rarely the meme. It's you know, nurture, caring, kindness. That is rarely the meme. I mean, hell. Well, I was just thinking about. I want to hold off on that thought for just a moment longer while we get through this a little deeper. Well, all right, let me throw it out there. Greta Thunberg is the person of the year on Time Magazine.
I predicted that would happen. That was so predictable. I mean, let's face it, Adolf Hitler was the person of the year in, what, 1938 or something?
Yeah.
I mean, they've told you is that we've successfully deployed a weaponized person, a persona, into your consciousness. We've given a face to anti-humanism.
Right.
I mean, I literally had somebody on Facebook, somebody I actually like and admire, attack me for attacking a child. And I said, this isn't a child. This is a weaponized persona that's been put in our midst. Because by being a so-called child, it becomes an unassailable enemy.
So, exactly.
I mean, there you go. I mean, all the previous spokesmen, all the world councils, everybody that's talked about climate change and global warming and global cooling and how wasteful we are and breathing our CO2 and farting cows were unsuccessful because we could attack back at them. We could deploy science against them. We could use logic and reasoning and argument. But then you give us a child and a blonde-haired, blue-eyed, pig-tailed girl.
Looking just like a Nazi youth party.
Exactly. In fact, that imagery is so persistent that you're going, okay, this rolled right out of Central Casting, didn't it? And there you go.
Yeah, now you got your impossible whopper, and you've got Donald Trump talking about toilets. Right? I mean, good golly. Yeah. This 2020 election, I'm so fascinated by it. I'm fascinated with the impeachment, although I'm not really following it. I'm fascinated with the elections that are coming, who they'll put up there. Will Hillary get back up on stage all googly head and needing her adrenochrome? If Hillary were to win, if she were even to run, I would be planning my trip to Guatemala. I swear.
She's not viable as a candidate, and she's certainly not viable at this point against Trump. Trump's been running his campaign since Inauguration Day. I mean, he was just here in my backyard in Hershey, Pennsylvania yesterday. Probably 20,000 people lined up in the cold to go in and listen to Donald Trump do basically, a campaign rally. He's been running since the day he entered the White House. Almost anything that is leveled against Trump, he's going to use. And this impeachment, you're about to see a debacle here. I don't know how people perceive Trump. I've basically stood back, much like I did with Obama, and folded my arms and go, okay, this should be an interesting show. Let's see how it goes. And what he represents is something I don't think we've seen before, because I don't think we've ever seen anybody as defiant as he is or as untouched by, they called Reagan the Teflon president, but the truth of the matter is so far, Trump has done a much better job at that. And he has used a type of psychic jujitsu to basically reverse forces, even as he's made some frankly really horrible decisions. I mean, his appointments are horrendous. His positions on things are just, in some cases, brain dead. And yet he seems to represent some sort of force that, I don't look at this politically so much as I look at it catalytically. And I'm going, he represents something in the collective consciousness. He's both the combined idealized savior for those who are of a certain bent, and he is the ultimate demon antichrist for those of the other side of the bent, and yet he seems to be able to embrace both of those simultaneously and make it work.
Yes.
It's a hell of a feat when you think about it.
Yes.
And so 2020, this election, it's wide open. I really think at this point, for the first time, there's no clear path forward for much of anybody, except Trump will be running. He will be the Republican Party's ticket because they don't have any choice. They're saddled with him. They gave us weak, impotent candidates for three election cycles, and finally somebody climbed onto the horse and said, screw it, I'm riding in. So after giving us McCain and Romney and people like that, this antiseptic Republican bullshit, what you finally got was somebody that was with some stones that said, I'm going to get on and ride the bull.
He's just going to go up there and say it. I was so fascinated by the debates between Trump and Hillary. And when I was on your program with Emily Moyer, I kind of went through the cycles I saw. The destruction of the man, the president, Bill Clinton, by the admission of inserting a cigar into his secretary. The forcing of the president into office with Donald Trump, with George W. Bush, losing that sense of election fraud. And then a false president, an ineligible president with the birther movement, with Barack Obama. Let me see if I can get Donald Trump out of my head here.
But you got Donald Trump in there because he was shepherding that whole birther movement. So.
He did. I know. Yeah. I mean, during the debates, that's what they talked about most of the time, was that it was Trump that did the birther movement. And then finally, what I considered the Honey Boo Boo effect, which was basically making America look like buffoons to the rest of the world, so that the austerity that comes with being American, that liberty, justice, and freedom, was all just crashed and burned into this Honey Boo Boo. But Trump, he surpassed all of that. I mean, I can't believe the man's president, you know, but I got nothing in this. I got no ball game in politics. I really don't. I'm not anti-Trump. I'm not pro-Trump. I'm nothing in that sense, because I don't believe in like a legitimate system. I believe in social engineering. I believe in a transformation of humanity utilizing these systems in order to finally get us to that point where we are just automatons.
Or using them transformationally to get us to the point where we discard these systems, which, you know, like I said before, it's a two-edged system. We have, in the collective consciousness, we've had the leaders that were required. And by the term leaders, I mean, the history of America is largely one where we haven't had a constitutional republic since 1861. But certainly by the end of the Civil War, we no longer had the constitutional government. And in fact, they began that transformation during the Civil War and afterwards with Reconstruction and the 14th Amendment. So the country is not what it was architected to be. It largely was transformed by powers outside of it, if it was ever actually independent in the first place. But as the collective consciousness, we've always had leaders who were sort of their time, shall we say. I mean, it's hard to imagine the Depression era without the figure of FDR coming in, whether that was engineered or not. There was a certain heroism to it. I mean, I talked to my grandparents about the Depression, and they were quite enamored of FDR, in spite of the fact that I cringe at what happened to our nation during that period of time. But if you look, go back to the period of the 60s and the Vietnam War and JFK and what happened there and the rise of the protest movements. And this was some of the stuff I was synopsising as I was going through kind of my eye of the needle material, was this concept that if you go back to the 60s and you look at what happened there in rapid succession, there was a shooting gallery. I mean, they literally took out a president, his brother, two civil rights leaders, Malcolm X and Martin Luther King. And in the process of that, introduced this counterculture movement, anti-war movement. That was where America really started to go down, because that was the first time that we ever saw a popular outcry that literally resulted in the disgracing of our own troops in a foreign theater of war. Whether you agree with that or not. I mean, we had troops that returned from Vietnam, and to our shame, those troops were called baby killers because people had sat at home in their living rooms and watched them napalm people on the ground in Vietnam and in Southeast Asia. You know, so we were subjected to that. My childhood is largely, I remember as a kid watching the evening news with Uncle Walter and hearing the evening body counts and just being absolutely horrified by what kind of an implication that was, that every night they counted the number of bodies that had dropped to the ground in Southeast Asia, and how horrific that was, and watching the body bags come back. And so we were being ritually and systematically traumatized and desensitized as children by this media platform called TV that had become universal in our lives, much like the internet is now for this generation. And the result of that is that we became more jaded about our system. We became more aware. I mean, we are more aware in some sense, but that awareness has come with a huge amount of psychic pain as well, as, you know, what we've been talking about, this desensitization and disillusionment that's a result of the fact that we woke up and what we woke up to was a nightmare and the throbbing pain never stops. And where the hell does that end?
Yes. Yes. And I'm thinking of the meme, okay, boomer, so you still speak to old people?
No, now we are old people.
There's no integration, you know, there's segregation of age. There's no no learning from those that came through it. I call it the rise of the ultra crepidarian. And ultra crepidarianism is the idea that opinion is fact. So as long as you think it's true, it's all right. That's the truth. And that's where we're at. They've really conditioned the students of today to simply rely on their opinion of things as opposed to actual facts. If you have an opinion on it, then it must be true. It must be what it is, right?
But it really has been that way for a long time. That's been the point of polling. I mean, most of our decisions that we make in our lives are based, we think they're based on information, but are they? I mean, isn't there an emotional component to almost everything that we do? We like certain colors. We drive certain types of cars. Some like blondes, some like redheads. You know, we give ourselves a lot of credit for being rational and informed consumers. The truth of the matter is that what Madison Avenue has always known has been how to play to the unconscious, which is largely dominated by some very reptilian brain primitive modes, including sexuality, that are our triggers for how we make decisions.
Man, they're always so happy on those commercials. They're dancing. They're excited to be alive.
Yeah. You mean like the Viagra commercials?
Yeah. Pretty much everyone, you know, all of them. They're just all so excited to be alive, to go down to Old Navy and shop, and, you know, they're going to dance a jig on their way there.
Yeah, you got a cheerleader in the store. You've got, what is it, Neil Patrick. How's
MPH, and Neil Patrick Harris.
Patrick Harris doing this cheerleading thing in front of the cheering throngs.
You've been subjected to Hulu as well.
Yeah, so you can go and buy your cheap Chinese imported denim clothes and feel good about it, because Neil Patrick Harris, why do I keep hatching his name?
MPH.
Doogie Howser has told you so.
My favorite film by him is Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
It's a great movie, actually.
You gotta love it, yeah. And it really speaks to today. I mean, it does. You know, now we got transgenderism. You can't talk about any of this stuff, though. Let's not talk about it, because then you're a villain if you have an opinion on that. 16 genders. I mean, that's just, to me, I don't know how many genders there are. I didn't even know what a cisgender was, all right? I had to look up incel, right? I don't know any of this stuff. I'm a boomer, right? I have no idea. I don't know what generation I am even. I don't believe in any of these type of terms. But yet, you know, nothing's going to separate people more and more than having all these different ideologies. So how do we thread this eye of the needle?
Yeah, well, it's a spiritual game. I mean, first off, you have to understand who you are. And who you are is not necessarily who you think you are. You know, this is the visceral response of why we talk about politics and and advertising and social engineering is because of who we've been told we are, but who we really are authentically doesn't occur to us until we come face to face with our own inner being.
And who's asking who you are?
Or what you are. You know, what composes the I? This is kind of how I put it in the notes that I sent you. Try to locate where you are. Where is the awareness of the you that knows the you that knows you? Because there's a triad there. In other words, there's an affirmation of identity. There's something inside of you that locates you as you. An identity. We think it's the ego or the id or the superego, but there's a voice inside of you that once everything else dies down, it's the locus center of who you are. You exist, but you do not exist in the body quite the way that you visualize it. And the first challenge of sitting down and meditating is to locate, where is the center? Where is the center of you? Where is that place? And once you begin to localize it, you realize it's not really where you think it is. It's actually sitting out there observing you. And then above that is the super consciousness that is part of our connectedness to, you know, call it source, spirit, higher self, whatever you want to call it. But that's the silver cord that connects everything. And people don't do that. People are not reflective because people are constantly reflexing against the system that we live in. And so until you can do that, you really cannot interact with this reality objectively. We're constantly under the glass of the microscope being scrutinized and dyed and probed and forced to move, rather than taking control of that microscope or that telescope or whatever lens you want to use and realizing that you are the being that sits outside of the observable. You are both the observer and the observed. So that probably answered no question, but
it brought up more questions.
that's always good.
Yeah, because we identify now with what we're opposed. And that's not you. If we're in constant opposition of everything and thinking that if we could get cows to stop farting, if we could get everybody to eat Impossible Whoppers, if we could, just be that person that gets everybody to finally do everything correctly and yet have no knowledge of who we are, then you're no one. You're nothing but the meme.
See, the reason why we have gender wars, the reason why we're going through this whole issue of transgenderism and alternative sexualities and things like that is because those are the things we are told we are. And we're split by it. We're sorted in bins according to identities. And so in the course of social engineering, it becomes efficient to at some point break these categories down. In other words, you're basically in a classification process of like, okay, so now we're not male or just male or female anymore. Let's dissect this. How many more gradients are there to the rainbow? How many ways can we split this? We'll have 26 letters in a very long class of people who all claim special rights because of their unique identity within the spectrum of a special class of people. But wait a minute, that's what individuals are.
Right.
So really it's odd because in the strive for individualism within these identity groups, they're actually categorizing themselves into substrates of something that makes them less than what they actually are, which is a unique individual human being.
Yes. Yes.
For political purposes, for which people will raise money. And banks will take out advertising, and you'll go to big rallies somewhere and watch people dance around and drag, which can be quite entertaining. And at the end of the day, you go home and you stop by the bank machine and you put your card in, and Bank of America says, thank you, because you have donated $2 to your local LGBT organization. And so who made money on that? Well, the same people that always make money on it. They just cashed in on your identity and found a whole new way to do this. And that's the social justice warrior system. You became less human rather than you simply being the unique person that you are, regardless of how you view yourself. Your uniqueness is something you project onto the screen of life. And we've lost the ability to do that.
I'm offended when computers thank me. I really am. It annoys me. Like, don't thank me. You're a computer. You have nothing. You are nothing. You have no individuality. Your appreciation of me means nothing at all. Like, but yeah, so that's another layer. You know, we do now have a citizen robot with Sophia. And I mean, it's, they finally announced the first flying car coming. We've got the first smart city that I happen to live in. Being built here in Greenville, South Carolina. We've got autonomous vehicles, drones, they'll all be coming. And everything will be facial recognition. Everything will be monitored. Everyone is going to feel that eye staring down. And it's going to cause us all to lose our individuality, to lose that sense of purpose, that creative play that's in our soul. Because when you feel monitored, you know, the saying goes, dance like no one is watching. Well, there's never going to be a moment. Your TV's hacked and being watching you by hackers. The FBI warning about hackers. Hackers.
That's called mocking you, though. That's not warning. If they had warned you 25 years ago, that would have been useful. This is mocking the victim. Which yes. is normally what they do. They tell you something so far after the fact that you just sit there and you go, wow, didn't see that coming, moron.
I feel it. I feel monitored all the time, just like I was with the opening statements. You know, I'm constantly checking what I say. I don't share my true feelings often, especially even here on the show, because I know Big Brother's listening. You know, I'm not going to tell you about my life. I'm not going to tell you personal things here. And it's not because I don't love my audience and want to share everything. I do. I want to tell them everything that's going on in my life, but I won't. Self-censorship. And I live with that every day. It's a hard place to be.
I'm sort of the opposite. I've probably overshared, but I frankly don't care at this point. And I've decided that past a certain point, there wasn't much left that anybody could hold against me or put out there that would scandalize me or shock anyone. I don't care. And that can be marvelously liberating, although you will go through humiliation and a sense of shame, and you better have dealt with a fair amount of your own internal strife. Anxiety, stress. I mean, that's all present. It's designed to be present. But, in an ideal world, I mean, people talk about they want to develop their spiritual gifts, and people talk about telepathy and how it would be great if we could communicate mentally. And I'm like, you know, you might want to think about that twice, because once you open the channel, you're sort of in this place where. Again, minus what I shared at the beginning of the show about certain techniques that you use to control your thought development inside of your brain, you really are completely wide open. And that means you can no longer play poker.
Right.
That means you can't cheat on your wife. It means you can't lie about your taxes. What would happen in a world that was so open and transparent there was no guile anymore? And see, our world's based on that. It's based on the stratification of good and evil and the fact that essentially we're all sinners who fell from grace long ago and constantly condemned. That's the religious system we were given. That's the lie that we're told. You know, we were children. We were born naked, and we were allowed to be like that for a very brief period of time, and then they said, well, now you got to wear clothes. And by the way, you have to wear a certain brand, and we'll be happy to sell them to you, thank you very much, and make money off of it. We'll make money off of your shame. We don't want you sewing fig leaves together or putting on animal furs. We want you to go to Old Navy and buy clothes from Doogie Howser. So in a sense, it is our own imperfections, this fallen state that we think we're in, that creates the stratification between us and the perception of this power structure that we're opposing. You know, and I'm kind of at the place where I'm going, you know, I'm really kind of sick of the whole game. It's like, I'm not that bad a person. I'm not that great either. But what the hell do I have to hide at this point?
Right.
Play with that. You know, you have to play with that thought for a little bit.
But I'll tell you what, I hate reading YouTube comments. Those things stick in my soul.
I do not.
And imagine if you could hear all of those thoughts. I mean, it's bad enough that I could go read them, but man, if I could hear all those thoughts. I mean, right now that unconscious, subconscious, future conscious, I don't know what it is, but they're going ahead and spewing it out, like you said, because they're behind the glass. And they're doing the things that they wouldn't do if we were face to face. And yeah, I mean, YouTube comments, especially the bad ones, for some reason, those things don't leave. They stick in my head and I won't read them. I won't read them because it hurts. It does. And they're always wrong.
Well, it's weaponized media. It was designed to be that way. But there's a level of hypnosis that goes into all of this. I mean, you and I have been around long enough. I was on the internet before there was an internet. I was on Usenet groups over Unix to Unix networks on a dial-up through a, what did they call them back in those days, where you dialed into a service.
Yeah, you had to actually put your phone in the modem.
Put your phone in the modem coupler. You dialed in, you went to a service, and then it allowed you to begin to access the UUNet, which was Usenet and mail lists and all this stuff that was all terminal back in the day. That was the earliest form of online forums. But, you know, if you've lived long enough, if you through the 90s matriculated through the online forum experience, you saw how toxic that culture was. And I mean, literally, there was harvesting going on a very high level. I mean, we think of it as being innocuous, sitting in front of these screens. But I will tell you, there's a presence there. There is a mediumistic aspect to this that is beyond spectral in terms of how we interact with it. We are literally interacting, in some sense, very fluidly with these machines. And they do screw with us. And people do have access to us, to our psyche, to our mind. There's hypnosis going on. There's mind control going on. There's harvesting on a very high level. It's real.
I got to admit, it takes a sheer act of will for me to actually turn my computer on. I don't want to.
Yeah. I don't. I think we've all gone through that. I know Emily Moyer's gone through it. There was a point last year where I was like, I'm sorry, but you do have to actually turn the computer on. There is functionally things we need to do because we are a media outlet, but I get it. And yeah. I get like that too. And I think we should have great circumspect about how we interact with these things and understand that there is an AI running in the background. Forget all of the fear talk that's going on about, oh, the day that AI comes online and it's sentient. And it's kind of like, no, it's already there. It's already been functioning for a long time. Again, they don't tell you about anything in advance. They basically tell you after they've already initialized it, had it running for a long time and basically operative. And then, oh yeah, by the way, you might want to be careful about that. You know, could be a problem. It's kind of like, yeah, it really is.
Yeah. Like that late warning, right? Yeah. I could clear an AOL chat room in 10 minutes or less every single time.
Yes.
I mean, all you had to do was like inject some thought. And like, why are you making me think? And they would just clear out of the room like roaches to light. And I remember when I logged into AOL in 2012, and they used to give you a poll every time you would log in. And the poll for 2012 was, would you take a national ID card? I kid you not. Back in 2012, that was, no, it has to be longer than that. That was much longer than 2012. It was the year 2000. The year 2000.
Way longer than most people. Yeah, yeah, 2000. Sure, because they were positioning us then. I mean, if you just think about this, if you step through 2000 and the interim that was, because 2001 was really the beginning of the millennium, and then jump forward to 2012. And then backward again to 1984. And you start to see the process that we're being put through.
What would be the message as we wrap up this first hour that you would want the world to hear?
That in all of this darkness, there's ways out. I mean, we are the answer. And the truth of the matter is that you know, I'm calling part of what I'm doing in this series is I'm foreshadowing, and I'm trying to foreshadow patterns that people can begin to use to break out of these mindsets and begin to heal. We are not the sum total of our trauma. We are not in a hopeless situation. We sit at the seat of our own consciousness. And when we begin to realize that, we can begin to take control of this again. And we do it from our own standpoint first. I'm not a big cheerleader for ascension or any kind of collective activation, but I do see that the next 5 to 6 years is critical for humanity. And that critical mass means unleashing something that's been inside of us for a long time. And if I believed that this was all dark and nihilistic and hopeless, we wouldn't be having this conversation. I would probably be off somewhere in an underground shelter. But I don't feel that way. I have a great deal of hope in humanity and how resilient we are. And I believe we have a period of time here, which is what I refer to as threading the needle of 2020. We are beings who possess a multi-threaded consciousness. And once we wake up to that, and we begin to realize that we can interact with this matrix in a very positive way. We can begin to change how we interact with the system in a very meaningful way. And so my task is to present information that's positive and enable people to begin to activate themselves, to activate themselves by freeing themselves from all these trapped energies that we have, from all this trauma that we've lived through endless lifetimes, and to get people to realize that it's not hopeless, that we have a greater calling, we have a greater destiny. We simply have to begin to do it one by one and then join with the others who are out there waiting for us. It's a cliche, but I don't necessarily think a cliche is a bad thing. I think we can do this. I think we can thread the needle. We can go through 2020. It's going to be hard. Next year is going to be painful. But I think we'll also begin to see that there's a great deal of hope on the horizon.
We are the ones we've been waiting for.
Exactly, exactly. I wasn't going to, but that's actually perfect. Yeah.
So we start moving toward what we're for instead of attacking what we're opposed.
We have many probable futures within us. We are deterministic creatures. All futures in a probabilistic scenario happen. We simply determine where our focus is going to be in focusing on best possible outcomes and then inhabiting that outcome. It's going to occur anyway.
And we'll dance in the streets like no one is watching.
Exactly. Because no one will be. They'll be too busy dancing themselves.
I would love that day. I see it. I believe in it as well, Randy. Cool. So how can people follow the Eye of the Needle and all of the work that you've been doing?
Yeah, right now that work is up on our Patreon group. That's patreon.com/offplanetmedia. Next year, I'll release some of these out into the webosphere somehow. If I still have a YouTube channel, perhaps. Perhaps there, and if not, you know, whatever social media conduits are available to us. But, you know, it's not so much about us asking for money as saying, hey, support us, give us a few bucks. And here's some material that you're not going to get out there.
Right.
And so that's where that material is available at.
Fantastic. I'm still trying to figure out how to get more than two reactions to my Twitter. How do you do that? You know, I see people talking about the dumbest things and they're getting 100 reactions. I'm putting out some serious stuff that I think is so important to the world, and I get two reactions on my Twitter.
You've got to be provocative. I'm actually kind of good at this because I put things out that capture people's attention, not necessarily in a good way. I'm sort of like the misbehaving child that gets a lot of attention because he'll do things that are embarrassing and inconvenient. But honestly, you know, people should be following you on Twitter. They should be.
If you want to give me a good Christmas present, head on over to Freeman TV Twitter. Everything of mine's Freeman TV, so all you got to do is do a search for that. And of course, you'll find every way that you can interact with me. But Twitter's my last bastion of social networking. I've been banned from everywhere else. So you can't find me, but Twitter, and it's right there on the website if you want to go there. But man, it would make my day to really interact with people. That would.
Let's do it, guys. Let's shake it up. Let's take Freeman and move that Twitter thing forward.
Absolutely. I mean, I got plenty of followers. I just got no reactions, you know. Now, welcome to Shadow Band.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Randy, let's wish everybody a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Yeah. Yeah. Welcome to 2020.
Welcome to 2020.
The future that you're going to occupy, and you get to decide what it's going to look like.
This is going to be the year of choice, isn't it?
It is. It is. And I don't mean the election.
Right. We're going to have to make those choices. And the choice is simple. I mean, the choice, maybe not simple, but it's in you. You know, it's that you that knows you, that wants to be you. And all we got to do is let that you out.
You just got it. There you go. Right there. That's exactly what it is.
Turn the key. Fantastic. So Off Planet Radio, you still going?
Yeah, we're running on YouTube. The website's offplanetradio.com and offplanetmedia.net. There's going to be some, I've been talking about this. It is really difficult right now to get websites up and running for whatever reason. A platform like Patreon sort of de-incentivizes having a website, and that's not a good thing because I'm an advocate of that. But when all else fails, the websites will be there, and that's really right. Going to be in the future, I think, where we're going to hang our hats is going to be on the websites again.
Yeah, folks, if I'm not on YouTube, I didn't quit.
This is important, what you've been saying about the feeds. People need to get the feeds.
Yes. Yes, they're everywhere. It's so easy, so simple. You know, there's so many different apps you could use. And, you know, just break away from the YouTube vibe. For me, that whole push to get people to follow through the feeds instead of the YouTube is kind of a epitome of where we're at. It's, you know, they're locked into that system. And if you vanish off YouTube, you vanished out of the world. You're just gone.
YouTube spent a decade aggregating all this content onto its platform. And now, over the last few years, it's systematically started to exercise iron grip control over it, to the point where it's like, if you don't meet certain criteria, you won't be here anymore. If you're less than 1,000 followers, if you're not monetized, da-da-da-da. And so apparently they've reached saturation point, and Alphabet Incorporated, the CIA company, has said, no, time to lower the boom on this.
Absolutely. And don't forget, they also, his wife runs, or her, runs 23andMe. So all of that tied together with your ancestry and everything else. This is the world that we don't want to move into. And this is the world that, you can believe it or not, dancing and loving, sharing, nurturing, and caring will change. It will change.
Yep. Visualize something better and then occupy it.
There you go. Well, guys, I always have to thank Steve Mercer. And I know Steve appears with you guys often, right?
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
That's awesome. And, you know, you guys can write Steve to get your voice heard, get who you want on the show, producersteve@freemantv.com. And, of course, if you have any issues with your membership, with listening to this program, or you want to just let me know anything, it's freeman@freemantv.com. And I hope to get you all over to the website to check it out, get deeper into there. There's 15 years of content down there, and half of it's never been on YouTube. So you'll have all kinds of new stuff to go to as we go into this Christmas break. So I'm going to take this waiting for the new year, start the show back up again. You always need a little break out of all of this. And you just, you know, I don't want to turn
this damn thing on. I'm a subscriber, just so people know.
It's true.
$8 a month, baby.
It's true. It's worth it. It is. And it supports everything. It keeps everything going. And it's worth it. I know that. So thank you all again so much for just being here all this time. You know, Randy, gosh, you know, we've been doing this, you know, what? You've been going 16 years?
Yeah. Yeah, 16 years. And
15 years for me. I mean, my God, we're about to outdo Art Bell.
We are, yeah.
That's impressive.
It is.
All right, so thank you all so much, and have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And we will see you all next year.
Blessings.